This episode features an interview with Leslie Gaston Bird, AMPS, MPSE. She is an audio engineer, governor at large for the Audio Engineering Society, and a member of the Recording Academy. She has worked for National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., Colorado Public Radio, the Colorado Symphony Orchestra, Postmodern Company, and the University of Colorado in Denver. She is also the author of the book Women in Audio. Thank you, Leslie, for being here with us. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. It's super awesome to be here. Thank you, guys.
I don't even know how to start talking to you because I feel like everything Susan just said, I know nothing about. So I don't know what the governor at large means, but that's a really cool title.
I can tell you about my favorite plugins. Just kidding. Yeah, so that's how audio podcasts usually go. So what's your favorite plugin?
I don't even care about that. I want to know about
right?
You. Like, tell us about you, Leslie.
It's been done. So governor at large of the Audio Engineering Society. So the AES is basically a society, a scholarly membership organization with over 12,000 members around the world, from Japan to Africa and India and Australia, and of course the States, South America and England. And we have a board of governors, and that board of governors represents all different regions of the globe. And I'm one of those representatives. And so we vote on stuff that's pertinent to the running of the organization, and we try and get people to join the AES. And so that's what it means to be a governor at large.
That is awesome. I love the AES. How long has AES been around?
Since 1948.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow.
Yep, so this will be, next year we're having our 150th convention.
Sweet.
And the society, yeah, what is that, 72 years?
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long have you been part of the AES before you got into being, like, the governor at large and all that?
Well, you know, when I went to school, my undergrad at Indiana University was from 1987 to 1991, in that kind of time. And we had the journal, the AES journal was there, and I got to look at it. And there were mathematical symbols in there, like delta and sigma and things. And even though I had a better grasp of calculus at that time, I still didn't know how it related to audio. But come to find out several years later in 2004, when I was getting my master's degree at UC Denver, my two mentors, who were Rich Sanders and Roy Pritz, both have now since passed away. But those two guys got me into the AES, and they were really slick about it. They said, you know, Leslie, you'd be good if you could be a really good contributor to the AES if you join. Of course, they're just buttering you up, you know, because they just need, need lots of members. I'm like, yeah, I could. I have so much to offer. And I did. But yeah, the first thing I did when I joined AES was enter in a student recording competition. And so that was the first thing I did. And I went to a convention in Berlin, Germany, and that was awesome. And I just got hooked. All the networking, all the people that you meet, all the technology that's out there, and, you know, the way people are discovering new things about audio. Oh, man, it's so much fun. I love the AES.
That's awesome. I never found out, like, how you, you know, became part of that. So in that same vein of questions, how did you become part of the Sound Girls organization?
Oh, yeah, that was really cool. So I connected with, if Anastasia is listening out there. Hi, Anastasia. So I can't remember what prompted this conversation with Anastasia and I. I think I was just looking for women's organizations dealing with audio because I had known about WAM, Women's Audio Mission. And Anastasia's like, oh, you should meet. I think she introduced me to three people at the same time, Zionia, Nolan, Carrie, and then there was a third woman that she wanted me to meet. And I'm like, oh, who's this Carrie person? And Carrie Kies was running Sound Girls, and she was super welcoming. And I had plans to be in Los Angeles for the NAMM convention, and Carrie said, you should come to our mentoring workshop. You should be part of our mentoring workshop. And she had me, I think, speaking to women about post-production.
Awesome.
And that's the first time I met Fela Davis. That's the first time I met Jet Galindo. And I was like, oh man, this is really super cool. So, you know, being in that environment, at that mentoring house, that mentoring session was held at a house they were renting, which is a cool house. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you can't beat that. And we're in a cool house, with cool catering, and it was just a really positive experience. And yeah, I got more and more involved in that. And when I came to England, she asked me to over time, she asked me to head up the England chapter.
So you are, I was gonna say, you are the head of the England chapter, and you live over in England. So we were just talking a little bit before we got on air here, just, you know, the COVID and all the weird that's been going on internationally, too, and just you made a statement there, and we were like, oh, let's talk about this on the podcast. So you said, as far as working in England, I'm going to misquote you, so if you want to say it again for us.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you put your ellipses in there, and then I'll finish up. There. You know, it's really difficult because I'm 51 years old now, a black woman living in England. And this actually happened to me. It wasn't in England. I was actually attending a thing in Los Angeles, but I had another black engineer at Motion Picture Sound Editors event came up to me and said, you know, you're a re-recording mixer? You know, you're like a unicorn. And I'm just sitting here. I mean, like, I can't. I'm sure there are some, and, you know, just to rewind a little bit on my background, I cut my teeth on post-production in Denver, Colorado, not Hollywood, not Los Angeles. So right. I do documentary, short film, short features. And, got to learn that at Postmodern Company in Denver. So, you know, I'm doing all, you know, a lot of independent stuff. So when I went to Hollywood, and they're like, you're a re-recording mixer. You know, you're like a unicorn. We don't see many of you out here. And so, you know, multiply that experience that I had in Hollywood with being in England. And as much networking as I've done, the only two other black women that I've met in the industry working in sound are location sound people, which, and they're fantastic. Judy Lee and Adriana Taylor. And so I know them. I actually haven't met Adrian in person, but wow. So if you take a unicorn out of the United States of America, put her in England. You know, so it's a unicorn with an American accent now.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, you know, billing myself as a re-recording mixer. And, you know, it seems like the response I'm getting is, but are you really? So, you know, I think, you know, rebranding myself and, you know, going back and networking a lot. I mean, it's a pretty scary thing. You know, I left a job as a tenured professor. I had tenure at the University of Colorado Denver as an associate professor. And then I moved because my husband's British, and we moved to England. And I think I made an assumption that, oh, I'm just going to slide myself into another teaching gig. But I don't have a PhD. So in this country, you know, in order to get a comparable, you know, in terms of academic rank, you have to have a PhD. So I'm like, well, you know, let's go back to freelancing. And oh man, it's just, so I'm at that juncture of like, okay, I'm 51. How much more of this do I really need to do? I could just stop, you know, or, you know, and then the other part of what I'm trying to do is say, no, I'm a friggin' talented audio engineer, and I have all these films under my belt, and I love sound design and I love mixing. So let's do that, shall we? So that's where I'm at. And it's very interesting. And I think the most frustrating part of articulating this to you guys and to the multitudes of people that are listening to this podcast, of course, people are saying, you know, well, we don't discriminate. And of course, you know, sure. we're not like that. And anybody can do this job. But dude, you know, walk a mile in the shoes of a unicorn.
Yeah.
And then, you know, say that. So I don't know. Check with me in 2 years. I'll probably be telling some amazing story about, you know, how I reinvented myself, which I have plans to do.
Any plans you want to share, or you're just working them out yourself right now?
Well, I'm starting a PhD. So that was sort of like the first order of business. Like if I want to continue in academia, I do need that PhD. But it's my hope that Getting the PhD will also afford me the opportunity to explore things like immersive audio. My dissertation is going to be on immersive sound design and specifically nice. Access to those tools for underrepresented groups. And so, that's my plan, is to sort of hit that PhD and then, see where that takes me. And then just to keep, pumping up my LinkedIn profile and letting people know I'm accepting clients.
I think that's super cool, Leslie, because, I mean, when I was going to school and looking at going to grad school, I felt like I had to do it right outside of college. So that was, like, what everyone was pushing is, like, you need to, after your bachelor's, immediately go for your master's. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. So I went straight to work, you know? So I think it's really awesome that you're, still pursuing that education later in, later in your career and all of that. That's super inspiring.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
You don't have to do everything right away.
No. I mean, it's I'm a Montessori kid. I went to Montessori school and I sort of feel like I have this love of learning, not that you have to go to Montessori to have that, but that's just my background. And, I was a Girl Scout and, I really wanted to earn the Dabbler badge,
Yeah.
And I think that's part of sort of my character, my essence, if you will. I love learning and I love experimenting and I love audio. And if it means getting a PhD, fine. If it means sort of checking out sound design with Wyze and Unity, fine. I mean, I've, been dabbling in that a little bit. And using Reaper and not just being married to Pro Tools as a DAW, teaching in Logic and I know podcast viewers can't see it, but on our Skype call the three of us can see each other and there's an electronic drum set and a bass guitar behind me. My house is a freaking wreck.
Mine too.
Because I just love to do everything,
You can see all of my crap behind me, including the sewing machine back there.
Right. It drives my husband crazy, but it's like, today I'm going to do this song and tomorrow I'm going to mix a movie and, I'm still working on the song. So please don't put that thing away that I'm using.
Yeah, so. Speaking of songs, I just found a song you did. It's on Spotify. I was doing some research. Should I not tell people to go look?
No, you can't. No, anything. If it's on Spotify, it's okay.
I was telling Susan, I have this thing where I'm researching people and trying to figure out who they are and stuff, where I'll just go on every media outlet I can find and type in their name and see what happens. And I had no idea that you had produced a song. So I was listening to it last night and I had a few drinks and all of a sudden I was like in a little ethereal moment. It was very cool.
Ah, yeah. So that must have been Nighttime Vision with Natalie
yep.
Webb. Yeah.
That's the one. I love that yeah. song. Yeah. Very
she's
cool.
A great singer. I've been doing some collaboration with her. On a couple other, we did a video together and we called it our lockdown video. So we did a couple cover songs and we've got some more, stuff that we're doing too. My cousin, Amikayla, runs a, Institute for Healing Arts in, Oakland, California. And so we collaborated on some stuff too. But if you want to find out about, Leslie's music, you got to look up Esmeralda, because I played bass with a band. It's a great band. I love those women. Esmeralda.
I'm looking that up.
Two albums, Immortal and Half Gram Holiday, were our two albums. And I played with them for years.
Bass is hands down my favorite instrument. I'm still trying to learn. I've had one for years. I'm horrible at it. It's not something that I think I'll ever master, but I love the sound of a good bass live. There's nothing like it for me.
Oh yeah.
Girl, your bass line in that song, that I listened to it two or three times because I was like, what the frig, dude? That was awesome. I really loved it. I love that it was present in the mix and up front. That thrills my soul. So as an audio engineer, I loved it.
Cyber five. Cyber fist bump.
Cyber fist bump. So just kind of, I don't know how we segue out of that, other than the other amazing thing you do, you did, is write this book.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll be honest, I haven't gotten the book yet. It's in my, it's like stuck in my, you know, Amazon folder of things I want to buy. She's showing us a picture of it. Sound girls, get the book, get the book, get the book. Just the more I read about it, the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm like, I need this in my entire catalog of books. So tell us why you wrote the book, where it came from, what it's about.
Sure. So this is a book called Women in Audio. It's part of the Audio Engineering Society Presents series and published by Focal Press, Routledge. It is 100, and, let's see, how many pages is my book? Not including the index, not including the appendices, not including the glossary. It's about 284 pages. And I love this book now that I can hold it. You know, working on the book was very intense. So I got the idea, you know, as a academic publisher parish is sort of the creed you live by. So you have to write or you have to record or you have to output scholarly stuff. And, you know, I'd been doing all this work with Sound Girls and learning about Women's Audio Mission. I had students, a couple of women in our undergraduate program really also influenced the book. I had one woman come up to me and said she was a recording arts major and she was thinking of dropping out. I'm like, well, why would you do that? We need you.
Yeah.
Don't drop out. And so she said, well, I don't know. And so we had a heart to heart in my office. I think we talked for like an hour and a half or something. And, years later, she told me she was really grateful, you know, that we had that talk and she stayed with it and she got her recording arts, emphasis, in her bachelor's degree. And then I had another student of mine who actually, I won't say who she is, but she actually, did some, an internship with Women's Audio Mission. And she had said, you know, I feel like the guys know all this stuff. How do they know all this stuff? Like they're throwing away on model numbers and I don't know any of these model numbers and all these plugins that they're talking about. And I said, but you have the highest grade in the class right now. Mm-hmm. So don't listen to, you know, all this shop talk. It's not what audio is about. It's about your ears. And, you know, loving the sound. So those two experiences, you know, I brought with me, I started hearing the same things from other professors, men professors. The girls are killing it in terms of grades, but they have this esteem thing. Mm. So, you know, we would talk about these things and I'm like, this needs to go in a book. So I pitched the book to Focal Press and the timing was just right because this was, you know, Me Too time-ish kind of thing, maybe a little after. And I think people were starting to take note of all the networking and all of the sort of revolution, mini revolution in the audio world that was taking place. And so the timing was right. So I said I'd write the book and I, you know, thought, yeah, this is going to be like a research paper. I'm an academic. I write stuff. I've written papers for the, you know, AES and have been published. And so I know how to write papers and do research. And so I started that way, like going through library articles and news clippings from over the years. And I got a chance to talk to a woman named Joan. I found a news clipping about the first all woman produced record in the 1970s. Wow. The exact date's in the book. I can't remember the exact date, but this group of women made a record called Virgo Rising, and it was released by women, recorded by women, performed by women. And this was during this age called second wave feminism. So I said, and so the woman who recorded it, her name was on this article, her email address was easily obtainable, so I contacted her. And she wrote me back. She said, well, you know, I'm 90 years old. I'm willing to talk to you, but my ears aren't that good. So why don't I just send you an email about my experiences? I said, that would be great. So she emailed me. this wonderful letter. It's all printed in the book, this email from Joan. And I got a couple months later, a man named Dana sent me an email, and he said, are you the Leslie Gaston that was talking to Joan about being an audio engineer? I said, yeah, he said she passed away. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, my goodness. And he said, I have some pictures that she left behind. Can I share them with you? And I'm like, okay, yeah. So Joan had no survivor. She didn't have kids. And I'm going to show the pictures here just so you guys can see them. And then I'll, you know, maybe make this page available to you so you can put it with the podcast or something. Because that what happened after that was I was standing in my dining room looking out the window thinking, who else would have gotten this? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What would have happened if I didn't reach out to Joan? Mm. Nobody knew who Joan Lowe was. I know there's a community of people that knew her, but the community of women in audio don't know about Joan. The first right. engineer on the first all-woman, you know, holy crap. And so I had this moment where I'm like, I can't do a research paper. What the hell am I thinking? I have to talk to people. And so I started making phone calls, and I started setting up interviews like the one we're doing now, and just was talking to people. And my publisher around, you know, when I said I'd have the book done, I think it was May of 2019, and you know, they got in touch with me. They said, okay, so where are you with the manuscript? I'm like, I'm still working on it, but I'll be done soon. And I did literally just had a couple interviews to finish up, and so they're like, no, we really have to be done now. I'm like, oh, so I had a full body headache for the last it was really painful. Well, I guess you could say it was like childbirth. Yeah, so getting this sucker finished was a beast. But now that I have a copy, and now that I'm holding it, and now that I can smell it and feel it and hold it and look at this, you know, look at the beautiful photos that women were kind enough to give me permission to use, you know, look at, for example, here's a screenshot. I'm looking at a screenshot of a Kima patch, which was Carla Scaletti's inventions. Carla Scaletti invented the Kima programming language, which is up there with Max and Super Collider and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, she let me use screenshots from that. I've got Jamie Angus, who invented special acoustic diffusers and based on spread spectrum frequencies. And spread spectrum, Jamie, of course, informed me that the woman who helped develop spread spectrum technology was Hedy Lamarr. You guys have read about Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah,
So if it wasn't for Hedy Lamarr, we wouldn't have Bluetooth, for example. And then I also wanted to make sure to interview women from all over the world. So I have women in Australia, Japan, Taiwan, Africa, just trying to really make the book as diverse as possible.
That is so cool. I can't wait for my copy. I again, yesterday looked at it. And I was like, okay, I got to download it. So Sound Girls, get your copy of Women Audio. Where do we get it? Where are places we can get it?
Well, the easiest thing to do is click on womeninaudiobook.com. And cool. That'll take you to the Routledge page, and you can buy it in any just about any currency. If you're in Germany, England, Africa, or South America, or the USA, yeah, you can pick your country from that tab. It's also on Amazon.
Awesome. We've got time to read and learn. So,
we've got time now.
Figure it out. Let's do it. Speaking about being more diverse and, you know, more inclusive in our industry and things like that, what are you as the governor at large of the AES, like what is the AES doing to help change that and help move that forward? And how can we help as Sound Girls, like to partner with you to to be more inclusive? Like, I think we're doing a lot, you know, just by talking and having these conversations, but are there other things you're doing that we need to know about? And
well, it's woo, there's just a lot to do. And so there's not like one answer. So AES and Sound Girls actually partnered at the last convention because we had mentoring sessions at AES New York, and they were very well attended. We had, I think, four discussions going on, which were roundtable discussions. And then, you know, women could sit in on live sound post-production. And I can't remember what the other two were because I wasn't actually sitting at those tables. But yes, it might have been like contracts or something like that, music recording. I can't remember. So that's one of the things. The AES in general. So in 2016, I was elected a vice president of the Western region for AES. So I was from Colorado up to Alberta, over to Vancouver, down to LA. That was my region on all the states in that little region. And, you know, when I accepted that role, you know, one thing I noticed doing the research was I was the first African-American to ever sit on the AES Board of Governors.
Wow.
Male or female. There's been no other African-Americans on the Board of Governors in its 68 at the time, year history.
Well, and props to you. That's
thank
awesome.
You. Thank you
That's
very much.
That's awesome.
So I felt a sense of duty and obligation to start this. At first, I wanted to resurrect the AES's Women in Audio Committee, which there was one. And from 1995 to 2000, AES had a working group called Project 2000, Women in Audio. And so it started in 1995, and they meant to, you know, discover why there weren't enough women in audio. This is freaking 25 years ago. And I knew about that committee. I knew that there was a committee in my early days in the AES, and I always wondered what happened to that committee. And I always heard all these stories, and those that's documented in the book as well. What happened to the Women in Audio Committee? So I thought, well, what we need to do is start Women in Audio again. And Agnieszka Rodzinska, who was another governor at the time, said, no, I think we need to call it Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And I thought, well, of course we do. That makes utter sense, because, you know, there are just as much underrepresentation by other groups, Blacks, African-American, in terms of language diversity, making sure that, you know, we're paying attention to our second largest continent, I think, represented is, I better not say, just because I'm not sure which the second largest, I think I read a study that our second most popular language was Spanish, followed by Chinese, but I don't want to say, I might have gotten that. It might be Chinese and then Spanish. Anyway, you know, we want to make sure that those languages are represented, you know, when we're trying to communicate with people. So there's all this diversity, even genre. I mean, at that time, if you go to AES conference, you could be guaranteed somebody would be doing a Beatles.
Right.
You know, or Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms, again, you know, it's like, you know, so even getting that kind of diversity. And so, we started that committee. And what have we been doing? So we have some guidelines that we set for conferences and conventions that we published, making sure that we have representation on panels. You know, let's not have, you know, six guys talking about this thing. You know, let's make sure we mix it up a little bit. Let's have some women on those panels. Let's have some people of color on those panels. And, you know, it's been slow going. For example, last year we had African Americans in audio. And I think we have to be careful, because that's not necessarily where we want to be. We don't necessarily want to be focused on African-Americans audio. We would maybe prefer to see representation of people of color on committees talking about loudspeakers and microphone design and headphone design. That's where we want to be. But when I was talking to the panelists for the African-Americans in audio panel, one of the things we wanted to talk about was just that. I mean, we haven't actually talked about the fact that people assume that you're hip hop engineer. If you say you're an audio engineer, it's like, oh, you must right. do dance tunes or something. It's like, well, no, I did the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. Yeah. So, I mean, just so we had to talk about that, you know, breaking through those barriers.
Sure.
And when we did that, after the panel, I had people coming up just saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for doing this. This is the first time AAS has ever done anything like this. And I felt an overwhelming sense of pride. And so did the people on the panel. And so did the people that were empowering to do this stuff. I mean, we had sound girls mentoring. We had women in audio bringing in these amazing mixing, mastering, and recording engineers. And their rooms were packed. People want this, you know, and they want this at an AES convention.
Yes.
You know, they want to see that representation. And next thing, you know, we need to do is work on that exhibit floor, you know.
Yep.
So we need to try and get that diverse. So those are the kinds of things we've been doing. And I swear, between the time I went to AES conference in 2016 and to the time I went to AES conference in 2020, night and day difference, amazing difference. And that's the kind of, I mean, we need to keep doing this. So, you know, I'm really proud of the work that we're doing.
I'm proud of the work that you're doing. I'm like so happy to be part of this, you know,
thank you.
And to join in and help any way I can, you know, if that means I'm on the floor, I'm on the floor. If that means, you know, I'm just calling every woman I know of, you know, whatever diverse group I can think of, and we can do a podcast and say, hey man, go to AES, like sign up. Let's get more women out there. Let's get more diversity in our, you know, whole industry. I think that's where it starts too, is a lot of these conventions. Like first, when I first heard of AES, one of the reasons I didn't join is because I heard from my professor, who was a dude, that I wasn't really like thrilled about, like a bunch of white old dudes going to be sitting around talking about stupid shit again. Like, I hear that everywhere. Like, I want to hear from someone who looks like me, acts like me, you know, talks like me, like all of that, all of us do. Uh-huh. And see what I see on the road, you know, I want that represented in life too, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we wanted to, I think it's sort of, you remember the Oldsmobile commercials? This is not your father's Oldsmobile.
Yes.
I mean, we don't want this to be like your professor's AES. I mean, we want this to be more encompassing. I mean, one of the things, and we talk about this at AES meetings, and the thing is we have chapters all over the world, and each city has their own personality, like LA is more post town. New York might be more music. Seattle might be more gaming and electronics, whatever. So every like region has their different personality. Japan is different than Poland, et cetera. And, you know, we want to bring that perspective in.
Yeah.
And not make it about, like I said, listening to Boston and the Beatles. Which, by the way, and I heard some really incredible multi-channel stuff, but, you know, it should be diverse multi-channel stuff. You know, the stuff that we're hearing and seeing on the exhibit floor should represent the music that's out there. I think the point that I was trying to make is, you know, as you see, you know, I teach, I'm tutoring part-time. I made it sound like I was unemployed. I actually teach part-time. And the young people in this program, a lot of them already know how to use Logic back and forth, and they've been watching tutorials, and they're producing their own stuff, and they know music business and all this kind of stuff. What does AES have to offer them? You know, they're already making this stuff. Well, you know, what about that plugin that you're using? How does it work? You know, are you just twiddling knobs, or do you know what these terms are? I had one of my kids, one of the young people that I work with, young adults, so hard, I'm old, called it a panoramic equalizer. I'm like, it's actually parametric. It's not panoramic. You know what I mean? So it's like that kind of theory, you know, there's a reason why it's called a parametric EQ. That they didn't just invent that. I mean, that came from analog console days, you know, being able to sweep frequencies and stuff. So we want to make sure that even though our 18 to 22 year olds are doing bedroom producing, that they also have access to this amazing technology. Their work should be represented at our shows. You know, why can't I have this, you know, 20-year-old who's already putting out albums? Why can't he run a workshop on all the stuff he's doing? I think he should totally, you know, be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, that's where we're trying. That's the direction we're trying to move.
That is so inspiring. And I really would love to see more of that because, Becky, I mean, whenever I go to those kind of conventions, especially like I go to NAB, for, you know, video and production, and it is still just all white dudes and booth girls and stuff like that. So I'm really glad that you guys on your side are working more on that diversity, because it's nicer to see than the booth girls. Like, so gross.
Booth girls. So sad.
So, Leslie, we are out of time, and I am so sorry about that, because we have really enjoyed talking to you today.
Well, anytime, you know, if we need to do a part two, I'm happy to join you again. But thanks for having me on the Sound Girls podcast. I really enjoyed talking with you guys. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm out there. If anybody wants to reach out to me, say hi or ask questions, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Awesome. I'm going to continually stalk to make sure. Your Spotify to see if you come out with another awesome bass riff line, and I'm gonna check out your band you used to be in. Yay, bass. Definitely get the book. We could talk to you all day, but
that would be awesome. But like I said, doors always open. Reach out anytime, and I really enjoyed talking with you guys today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining the Sound Girls podcast today. We look forward to hanging out with you guys next week.